welcome to The Open Source Musician, where we're connecting musicians and producers to open tools and ideas. We're on episode 85 today. I'm your host, Spencer Jackson, and happy to have you with us. Today, we're going to have an interview, which we haven't had for a while, so this will be good. I'll introduce our interviewee later, or you've probably read the title of this, so we'll get to it later, though. You're being treated to the theme song by listener Amal Pockin, a wonderful chiptune rendition of our Open Source Musician podcast theme song. Love these user contributions, so wouldn't mind a few more. We've got a whole bunch of news before we get to that, and of course, being a musician's podcast, we better play some music. So, let's go ahead and rip into the news. It's been about 6 months since I got an episode out. Life takes over, and if anybody else wants to kick out an episode in between mine, contact me. We'll work together, confabulate, and try and get more episodes out, but I'll keep kicking them out when I can. Anyway, in that six-month period, we had Ardor 5.8, Ardor 5.9, Ardor 5.10, and Ardor 5.11 released, which I am using right now. A lot of bug fixes in there, mostly stability stuff, but also some features. They added a count-in functionality, so you can start your song at bar 1 if you want, and still have a count-in so that you're at tempo with your click track. Go to the transport menu to access that. I think that came in Ardor 5.8. OS X got some graphic performance improvements if you're on that platform, some more control surfaces, better VCA automation, so the slave VCAs now can be automated. You can draw that automation in. So that's Ardor, what they've been up to. Cool one to check out is Sonoj. That might be no guarantees on pronunciation there. So it's a convention in Germany for open source musicians. I believe Falk TX of KX Studio fame, and recently with Mod Devices, and of course, one of the huge backbones in Linux audio. He'll be there, if I understand correctly. So go check it out if you're in that part of the world. And if you're not, tune in still, because it's November 4th and 5th. And they will be doing the next TuneStorm. So it'll be a worldwide live 24-hour TuneStorm challenge. We're working with them in our podcast to make that happen in November. So stay tuned for the next TuneStorm in November. IOGNU Linux had a release. It's another live Linux image based on Debian for audio stuff. Sonic Visualizer, which is a really cool spectrum analyzer for Linux. I think it's all platforms. They're open source. They have real-time time stretching for figuring out those tricky parts. You can take a song and slow it way down to figure out what on earth did they play there. This is an interesting one. Steinberg, the owners of the VST format, I guess. It has historically been proprietary, and they have changed it to be dual licensed. So it's GPL or proprietary, depending on what you want it to be. So you can use it for free under whatever conditions and publish your source code because you compiled with the GPL license. Other parts of it are MIT, but anyway, it's open source. So that's kind of cool. Makes it interesting. It's a great move on Steinberg's part. Frankly, it's been a while now. That was earlier in this news cycle, and it hasn't changed a ton, but there might be a few more Linux VSTs being released these days. Hard to say, hard to measure. The LSP plugins, Linux Studio plugins, had several releases. They added new delay plugins, Reverb Convolver, so special for longer impulse responses. They improved their efficiency for the Convolver. They added a new team member, and he added a utility oscillator plugin, and the phase detector source was released. So they are using the model of holding out the source code until they get enough funds raised. So they're still kicking out plugins, but they don't release the source code. So I think that is the second one that has the source released, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, I hope that they get them all released soon. So if you have some money and want to kick them to some good developers working hard to make good plugins for Linux, check out LSP Plugins. AJ Snapshot. So this is a command line interface tool that saves all the current jack connections and can restore that. They had a bug fix release. So let's see. I think I have that one twice. Yes, I do. We'll get to it later because it's... we'll save the best for last, maybe. Traction, which is not an open source company, but they renamed their DAW, was previously Traction, and now it is called Waveform, but it runs on a Raspberry Pi running Linux. So that's interesting and cool. They're supporting Linux, an open source platform on the Raspberry Pi, an open hardware device, if I remember right. Overtone DSP as well, I think, is kind of riding that wave and is resuming official Linux support and including ARM support on that. So that's cool. For a while, they were still distributing Linux ones, but they didn't advertise it. You had to ask specially, and they kind of gave you a big warning that we aren't really going to support it, which I understand. And yeah, that's, we're not going to go there today. If you want to, give me a call, send me an email, something. Guitarix had several releases. Their last most recent one was 0.35.6. They've improved their online preset browsing through... now the website eludes me. There's a website, musicalartifacts.org, something along those lines. You can find it if you search music artifacts, I'm sure. They also added a drum sequencer plugin, so if you hate metronomes, use that one to keep your time. Let's see, AV Linux had a release, the 2017.4.9. They added integration for Pulse and Jack so that they'll play nicely together out of the box, which is great. Radium had several releases. The most recent was 5.0.10, so that's a major version change since 4.8, I think. They've had a lot of bug fixes and performance improvements since then. They've added jack transport support, so you can sync it and link it with like other DAWs or sequencers or whatever jack-enabled programs you're using. So, and then your songs will run together. You could do Hydrogen with it, whatever. Tons of options. So the Guitarix plugins had some more releases. They added a envelope wah called GX Quack. They added a SV... I'm going to say it wrong. I think it's SVT preamp, bass preamp, recently Ampeg emulation. Anyway, that was one that was popular among the... everyone was excited in the mod duo community for that. Let's see. So this... somebody put this on my radar. It's a project called Ardu Touch, which is a open source, do-it-yourself hardware/software synth kit. I believe it's based on the Arduino, but it... I can't remember. So similar to that, basically you can build your own hardware synthesizer with that kit. So the link in the show notes, as with all these, tons of links in the show notes this time. Drum Gizmo had a big feature add called disk streaming support, which means that it can start playing the sample from memory and then play the rest of the sample from the disk, so that it doesn't have to load a whole Drum Gizmo sample pack into your computer's RAM. So if you have less RAM, Drum Gizmo basically was not an option, and that has changed. Now it is an option. I might actually start using it. It has a new UI, I've been RAM limited for a long time, so I've never really gotten into Drum Gizmo, but I want to check it out. I haven't been making much music lately, so I haven't been checking out anything yet. Specmorph had a couple releases, I think. 3.3 is their current version, 0.3.3. Some new sonic options, fewer dependencies, added vibrato and portamento, so you might check that one out. Last time I tried, I wasn't able to build it because it had some dependency problems, but now they've probably resolved them. Andes is a new synthesizer, VST synth, and it's based on Perlin noise, which is just it's a way of deterministic noise. Given a certain seed, you can repeat the random sequence. So kind of a fun thing. He posted some audio samples, which are fun to check out. So that's on GitHub. You can go look at it. Follow the links in the show notes. G-Sequencer is an advanced sequencer that's been worked on for a while. Another one I haven't tried, but if you are hankering for some sequencers, check that out. Yoshimi had a release, 1.5.3, and Zinad SubFX also had a new release, but they are calling it 3.0.2. So I helped to document their new macros feature in Zinad SubFX, so that is, I'm excited about that. In the especially it helps with plugins. If you're using it as a plugin and want to automate it in your DAW, now you load some parameters into a macro, and then you can automate that macro, and that macro will tweak all the parameters in the way you map it. So kind of a, well, it's honestly a really cool feature, pretty powerful already, and this was the most recent release to add it, and it'll only get more refined from here and more powerful. So Zinad SubFX, go check it out. Should mention that that is running an open source engine, and currently most of the UI is proprietary still, but he has now released the toolkit, and I think the full UI is going to follow sometime soonish. So stay tuned for that as it becomes more and more open source. Eventually will be completely open source again, which is awesome. And it's still compatible with the old fully open source FLTK UI. I just don't like the old one. So anyway, Zinad SubFX. I only speak of it a lot because I know more about it than the others. Somebody pointed out to me the VSCO Community Orchestra. So it's a bunch of orchestral samples, over 3,000, I think I read, samples, maybe more. They have SFZ maps. They have a bunch of links to different people's projects that use it. And one of them is the Virtual Playing Orchestra, which pulled some of the VSCO samples. It also pulled some from the No Budget Orchestra, which we've covered in past episodes, and Sonatina Symphony. Basically, everybody's making these new collections, trying to pull the best samples, which is great, because otherwise you have to try them all and find the best ones yourself. So I also put a link to the Virtual Playing Orchestra, which is a bunch of SFZs, if I remember right. Yeah, I'm pretty positive with that. So KX Studio had a new release of the DPF plugins. So, version 11 there. Helm had a release to version 9.0.9, which is cool. Some good features there. They added OpenGL GUI. They have new filters you can select. And they added ARM support, kind of a theme going on here, and a headless mode. So, don't have to think too long for what some opportunities that allows. Okay, so here's the one I took out earlier just because I wanted to save it. Noise Repellent. It's an LV2 plugin that does noise reduction. That's been a gaping hole in the community for a really long time. And now we have one that does that. So he's really done his homework on that, and it's already a lot of people are lauding its merits, I guess, something like that. So it's great to have a LV2 noise reduction plugin, and he's dedicated to making it even better still. So we'll watch that one continue to grow. Q Tractor got its seasonal updates as well as all the rest of the Q stuff. And one interesting thing from the V1 suite that got its seasonal updates as well is a new member of the V1 suite. So that's Synth V1, Sampler V1, and Drum Sample V1, something along those lines. But they also added Pad V1. So it's a pad synth based on the pad module from Zinad Sub Effects, developed by Paul Naska Octavian. And I think if I understand correctly, it's a re-implementation of that same algorithm. So that's cool. So it'll sound possibly slightly different, but it's still the same powerful pad producing synthesizer method. That's the word I'm looking for. Same method, different engine. But so that's cool. Go check that one out. QJack RCD. QJack Record is a small recording utility with a GUI to record jack things. So you can do that easily, quickly. And we had several projects that came back seemingly from the dead. One was YSynth, had the 2017-07-01 release. So YSynth is a DSSI plugin, a Dizzy plugin, which is a standard that didn't gain much traction, didn't go very far, but YSynth, it had a few gems in there, and YSynth was one of them. It's kind of this powerful blend of wavetable and subtractive synthesis, if I remember right, and they added new presets and preset categories and a bunch of bug fixes. And to see this being maintained again is really cool. It's nice to see that it's not just abandoned now, even though it was pretty mature and usable, but it's only going to get better as people work on stuff. So in that vein is Beast, which is kind of like a DAW. They call it a music synthesis and music creation environment sort of thing. So looking at it, it looks a bit like a DAW and has a built-in modular synth, though, which is a little different about it. So I believe it's centered towards using that synth for your music production. Fluid Synth is another one that had a release, and it's been a long time, so it's nice to see a maintenance release there, 1.1.7. I didn't see any big features that'll change our lives as musicians, but nonetheless, it's not going to get worse for an update, typically. So I promised you a little music. Let's get to that. I had some tracks sent in, which is awesome. I love when people send in tracks. These tracks came from J.H. He said to call him Forest and Garden J.H. Alushu. Anyway, so he heard our last episode with the Toonstorm reveal, and he heard Holstein's contribution called the Clear Creek Crawl, which went a little bit like this. And he decided it inspired him a little bit to make a virtual punk band and add that. So he wanted to just try his editing chops, see how he could use that track. Since Holstein didn't use a click track in it, you can't tell when you listen to it, but the timing just fluctuates a little bit very naturally, and so for him it was a good exercise in trying to generate a tempo map and follow that, and he made this punk rock remix he's calling the Beer Peak Brawl. So he said he half meant it in parody, but mostly to in honor, but he So he cranked the humanized function of hydrogen to make the drumming deliberately bad. But anyway, hopefully that sounds kind of fun. I thought it was kind of fun. But that's what we hope for. We hope the music inspires other people. We hope that other people can make new music based on the music we share here on Open Source Musicians. So he also shared a track that was more, shall we say, serious, and this one's called Intensity. So, I lied. I kind of pretended like the news was over. I guess I didn't say that. Is omission of the truth a lie? Okay, before we get too philosophical, there is one bit of exciting news that I've been holding out on ya, because I wanted to save it for last. Digits, the free synth, is now Digits, the free and open source synth. So Digits 2 was released under GPL. And, you know, that kind of raises a lot of questions. Like, first, what is a Digits? Well, that's a Digits you're hearing. So these are selections from the One Synth Challenge, the OSC, hosted at KVR. And so all these tunes, every drum hit and kick and bass and lead, those are all coming from Digits 2. So it's a very capable synth. And of course you're hearing it from some very capable synthesis who are masters of the trade. So folks go by Z-Prime, M-Ghost, Jasinski, Gwenon, BH9090. These guys are masters. They've been doing it a while, and I wanted to play you their tracks. So thanks to them. But if you listen, that is a capable synth. So, there's other questions that come up, though. Who made this synth? Why was it free? And why is it GPL now? If only we could talk to the author, you know? Wait a minute. How about I give him a phone call and record it? I think I'll do that. Actually, truth be told, I did that back in May, and it's taken me till now to get it out, so apologies. But I also have to apologize because it's not the best executed interview I've performed. There was some noise, I guess, on the audio. It made it really hard for me to understand what he was saying, and so my follow-up questions don't always make the most sense. There's also some wonderful interruptions from my kids. Love them. But you get what you get. Luckily, we have high quality for the show. So let's listen to a little bit more of these tracks, and then we'll launch that interview. See you at the end.
Are you still there?
Okay, good. Still here.
Cool.
All right. So welcome. Thank you for coming on the show. Sorry for some hiccups here and there, but why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, Lewis? Tell us who you are, where you're from, what you do.
Hey, so I'm Lewis. I'm from SoCal, and I live now in San Francisco. And I write synthesizers, and I do that professionally and also in my spare time sometimes when inspiration hits.
Okay, that's awesome. I didn't realize that you write it as a profession. I think I watched an older interview with you, and you worked for a company that looks like you make a rack mount VST unit. Is that still where you're working?
No, that was my previous company. Yeah, so that was Muse Research, and I moved over to, I'm with RetroNIMS right now, and we're doing music apps for iOS and Android.
Oh, okay, focusing on, yeah. So mobile synths, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
That's fun. What products do you make for professionally? What's your...
So we made the iOS version of, you know, IMPC. You know, it's a version of the popular MPC,
beat sampler machine. Thing.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah, we ported a couple Arturia products. We actually made a version of Digits called Phase 84, which is kind of an enhanced version off branching off of a older code base before it was GPL'd.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay, well, that's cool. That's interesting. I didn't know that. That's what I get for watching old interviews, I guess.
Oh yeah. So was it the one with Chris Hulsbeck and Amy Lee?
I'm not sure. I think it's what you had on your website is kind of talking about Digits. It was a video cast, but anyway.
Yeah, it would probably be that one, because I don't know if I did another video interview about Digits. Yeah, and that was probably way early, right? Didn't it just have sliders?
Yeah, I don't even know. I think at the time you said you didn't have a GUI, and now you definitely have a GUI. So
So that's a really old interview then, because it's had a GUI since I think 1.1 or something. So it's been a while. Yeah.
Okay. So what came first for you, music stuff or writing software or computer stuff?
Well, that's an interesting question. So I did basic programming a little bit growing up as a kid on the Commodore and the Amiga, and I was never great at it. And so, you know, somewhere when I was a teenager, you know, I got really discouraged because, you know, I was kind of following the demo scene and following other people who are coders, and they were just so much better than I was at that point. So I really just threw myself into music. And so I did a lot of tracking, you know, with stuff like Impulse Tracker and Mod Edit 2, I think was where I started, doing that kind of stuff for a while. And then, you know, I got back into programming in my late teens, you know, so when I was like 19, 20, you know, 19 or 20, not the year 1920.
Okay.
I'm not that old.
All right. I didn't parse that correctly in my mind, so.
I said that. Wait a minute, that doesn't sound quite right. And then I got to talking to people on, I started doing some game programming just for fun so I can really get solid at, you know, C and C++ and stuff. And so I used the Allegro library, and I went on the Allegro chat room and I started talking to people about, talking about music and synthesizers. And someone on the chat room showed me how to write an oscillator. And I said, well, isn't that pretty complicated? He says, no, check it out. It's just a few lines. And he did. And so I saw that and I kind of got sucked into then wanting to learn all about synthesizers, and I started kind of making these command line apps that would just kind of spit out a raw file or, you know, kind of pipe audio through Allegro or whatever. And they're really rough, you know, they aliased a lot, but they sound cool. And so it kind of kept my interest. And so I kept writing, you know, these kind of rudimentary synths, and I started learning more and more about it. And that kind of got me sucked into that kind of programming.
Huh. So kind of from the demo scene, from trackers, that stuff.
I'm sorry?
Oh, you say from demo scene stuff is kind of how you got into it?
Yeah. So that's when I first got into, well, that's not true. You know, I was doing computer music with Instant Music over on the Amiga, but, on the PC, almost ironically, is when I got into tracking and got really into electronic music.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So is that primarily what you do these days, is electronic music as well?
Yeah. So I have a couple of bands, and I write solo stuff, and it keeps me pretty busy.
Cool. So kind of dancier electronica or like?
So one of them's a retrowave band. So it's kind of like the music in Drive or I guess Stranger Things. And then the other band is, kind of like synth funk, kind of jazzier stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. Sounds like you have some variety to play in, so that's fun. Do you use Digits as well? Use your own synth?
So live, I pretty much use digits for my my solo band, and then for the other band, last time I just used the mini log, you know, the Korg polyphonic synth without a computer.
So that's a hardware synth you have for that?
Yeah, it's a hardware synth. Yeah.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah. That's fun. So I guess stepping back a little bit, how did you decide to start digits?
I'd been writing kind of somewhat simple, let me think about this for a second. I'd been writing synths for a number of years, but never anything real substantial or serious. So I just kind of said, I've amassed all this knowledge. I should do something with it. And I kind of wanted to write something that I could use in my own music. I was pretty fascinated with the Casio CZ series, which is another phase distortion synth, the first phase distortion synth.
Right. They're still releasing CZs, right? They have one right now.
Well, no, they released Virtual CZ, Casio had a pretty short time making kind of pro audio synthesizers. You know, making you know, not pianos, but you know, and not keyboards for learners, but making, you know, stuff that was trying to compete with like the you know, Yamaha DX7 or something like that. So this is like early 80s to early 90s, maybe. I don't know when the last CZ synth was, the last phase distortion synth. I'm pretty sure they ended up getting sued by Yamaha. I think the technique was too close, or something.
Yeah, because it's close enough to FM synthesis.
Yeah, it's weird because in software you don't really implement it in any kind of a close way to FM, not really, but maybe it's just close enough that it violated the patent. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I'm not super up on that history either. But okay, so you'd been writing kind of some toy synths, maybe we'll say, and you decided to get a little more serious. Why did you decide to make it freeware?
It's a good question. People always ask me that. I think part of it was that, you know, I grew up with free tools.
So sorry about that interruption.
That's quite all right.
So you're saying you had a lot of free tools that you'd been using. So
yes. So it's, you know, I kind of cut my teeth on, you know, a lot of the tracker stuff, and that was always available for free. And you know, people would make all, you know, in the demo scene, people would make all kinds of great tools, and it was always available for free or cheap. And you know, I think that kind of inspired me to make digits free, because I'm kind of a believer in that, you know, if you know, when possible, you know, make tools free, especially if it's something I'm kind of just making in my spare time. And you know, I'm getting a lot of use out of it myself, so it's, you know, kind of has that value already. So
okay, awesome. So how did you like feel like it was adopted? Did a lot of people kind of jump on early on, or was it kind of a slow growth?
I'm not totally sure. I have, you know, just run into people who are fans of it, which kind of blew me away. You know, every month there's a electronic music meetup over in San Francisco, and a couple of times I ran into people who, you know, were fans of digits, and yeah, I was kind of floored because I didn't realize that people were actually using it. So
live bands were using it, or like producers, recording people more?
Oh, producers, I think.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. So that reminds me of a question, but well, I'll get to that later. So I guess the big question now, since this is the Open Source Musician Podcast, is what made you then decide to relicense it under GPL and open the source?
I think just because I didn't have time to update it anymore. There's a couple of things. So, well, my computer's going to sleep. There was the fact that I didn't have the time for it. I wanted to kind of move on to other projects like the Drum Machine Slam, which I've been developing. And also, you know, when I first released it, you know, so the Linux version has never had a GUI, and I just never had time to create one for it because to my knowledge, VST GUI isn't or wasn't supported on modern Linuxes. So I made the Linux one headless, and I figured if I GPL'd it, then at least, you know, now people could create a GUI for it, and it'd be a lot more useful on that platform. I'm also, you know, hoping that people can, you know, contribute to it, fix stuff, but also, you know, kind of maybe learn a bit of synth coding from being able to browse the source code as well.
Cool. So you have you felt like since you've opened it up with the license change, have you had some contributions like that?
I've had a couple contributions. I don't think anyone's tried to submit a GUI yet, but I had a couple bug fixes and fixes for compilation, you know, on the Linux platform.
Cool. That's exactly what for me, that's a big reason why I like my software to be open source. That's I always hope for contributions, but also I want people to just look at it and learn is kind of what I hope, because I've learned so much from others' source code too. So,
oh yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Cool. So I guess what's the next step? Are you going to do more software, more synthesizers, or anything?
Yeah, so I'm working on SLAM right now, and I really it's already released. There's last December the KVR developer compo, so I released it for that. And I kind of have gone back to it. You know, I kind of let it be out there for a few months, and you know, I kind of got the bug to go and expand it a little bit more because I have a few ideas and things I want to do with it. So I've been working on that a bit on and off in my spare time, and you know, my hope is to create a really cool version of that pretty soon, get that out. But yeah, I'm always coming. You know, I always think of these ideas for synths, and I always want to do them. But you know, you can't do it all, right? You know,
so you're always tinkering with something.
It's always something, or you know, you think of an idea, and you're like, oh, I wish that existed, or I wish that existed on this OS, or I wish, you know, that existed for free or whatever. You know, and you kind of come up, you know, with these kind of wish lists of projects that never get done. So
cool. So, so I'm curious, your site, and I think it's your brand for Digits. It's Extent of the Jam. Where did that come from?
So, you know, I was going by my real name for my gigs for a while, and you know, it's funny. I didn't really gig till 2011, and that was kind of a weird accident that led up to that. And the flyer I was on had a few different names, and they're all fairly short, you know, nicknames and band names. And then I didn't have a name, so the guy who was doing the flyers put my full name on it, and it just sticks way out. And I said, okay, you know, I need to get a pen name, or a stage name, or so I picked Extent of the Jam, which is a reference to Cave Games, Cave being the shoot 'em up company that made Dodon Apache, and it's a kind of an obscure reference. You know, there's a... if you get the Japanese version, it says, you know, when you first boot it up, you know, most arcade games have a warning like this. It says, you know, you must use it within the territories, you know, that we released this version for. And then, you know, it was kind of English as a second language thing. It says, or you will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the jam. And I just thought that was like the funkiest copyright warning I'd ever seen. So, you know, I had to, I kind of grabbed that. I thought that was just kind of funny. And heck, I had the double meaning because, you know, you're jamming, right? You know, so. So, yeah. And, you know,
that's cool. It's a tribute.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I was doing, you know, chiptune stuff, so it made sense, right? So.
Cool. So do you still perform under Extent of the Jam?
Yeah. So that's my solo act. It's getting less solo all the time. I play now with a drummer and a violinist. But yeah, so that's my main act is Extent of the Jam. So, cool. So when I started doing VSCs, I just figured I'd use that name again, you know.
Cool. Well, is there anything else you'd like to bring up or discuss? Or
I could talk a little about why I kind of drifted towards phase distortion, if that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, digital signal processing is a really vast topic, and it requires a lot of specialized math. And so when I first started doing it, I didn't really know much about filter design or anything like that. So that's all pretty tricky stuff. So I started looking around for something besides FM that can kind of create a wide variety of sounds, and I kind of happened upon phase distortion synthesis, And it intrigued me because it made these sounds that were a little bit analog-y. They sounded a little bit like a Moog, but not quite. A little bit FM-y, but not quite. You know, it had resonance. It had kind of a filtered sound. And I thought, that's really cool that they're kind of approximating these classic synth sounds without a proper filter. And the math was so much easier behind phase distortion that I kind of started picking that apart and figuring out how that worked. Huh. You know, meanwhile, I was studying more and more DSP and stuff and, you know, eventually understood all the stuff. But, it was a good place to start why I did that. It's also a really cool synth. And it's just so clever and cool. And, you know, I'm a sucker for stuff like that. So, yeah, it fit well with my skill level in DSP at the time.
Okay, cool. So actually, yeah. one thing I should have asked, when the OSC came through, the KVR One Synth Challenge, our listeners are vaguely familiar with that. You have to use one synthesizer for everything, and for one of the challenges, they use digits. How did that go for you as the developer?
I felt really honored, and I was shocked by the sounds people were getting out of that thing, because you know everyone's got their own approach to sound design and comes up with such different sounds from every synth, and yeah, they're doing things with digits that I didn't think it could do. So it was really, really cool to see, and yeah,
I was impressed. They had some really great tracks, and they always do. So there wasn't like this huge influx of bug reports or anything at that time. I guess it was probably fairly mature.
Yeah, pretty mature. But I'm also always amazed at the bugs that go into a build and no one reports them. I think an early version had some crazy memory bug where it would allocate way too much memory. Oh. And after a few instances, I forget, it might have only been on one platform, but it would start slowing things down, and somehow no one caught it. And I'm kind of surprised to this day that it was just like, you know, that no one suspected anything or something. I don't know. And it's weird because I was using it too and I didn't really see it. So
that's, and I was actually going to say, since I guess you're using it on your own sets, you probably chased out a lot of bugs before you ever took it up on stage. So
yeah, so that demo song I made with it really put it through its paces. So that's
But memory bugs are pretty lurking. They can take a long time to hunt down. So,
oh yeah, they can be just really subtle.
Well, cool. So, just curious, kind of getting geekier here. Has it changed very much to go from desktop programming to mobile for synthesizers?
You know, yes and no. Because I'm always targeting a plugin format anyway when I do desktop development, so I don't know. It feels somewhat similar to me. The big things to me were, you know, something like on a phone OS or a mobile OS, you're expected to, you know, the OS could kill your app at any time, so you have this kind of persistent state thing. You know, it's things like that really start getting you. Overall, it's been pretty similar. I mean, one thing is that the devices aren't as powerful, so there's more optimization, and I kind of like that, honestly, because you know, you feel guilty when you write such straightforward DSP code on a desktop app like Digits, and it just, you know, the CPU just tears through it, and you're thinking, oh man, this is kind of crazy. A lot had to be optimized to get it to run on mobile.
Cool. Yeah, that I don't know. Every time I come near Java, I start, I don't know, for some reason it just doesn't get along with me. So, and trying to do blame mobile you. Development, Android, iOS, it's all like, why can't I just use C?
The iOS stuff's all C pretty much. You know, it's Objective-C for front ends, and then C++ for the back end. So yeah, all the audio stuff has to run C++. So,
cool. I maybe should look into it someday, but
yeah, it's fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right. Well, I don't have any other questions. Is there anything else you'd like to mention to the audience?
I think that's about it. Thanks so much for having me on, by the way.
Oh, you're very welcome. When I saw that you announced it was GPL'd, I was like, hey, I gotta get him on here. Like, that's the perfect story for the open source musician to have a synthesizer that's now open source, and, you know, to just have more tools available with a GPL license. That's, I love to see that. I think most of our listeners do too. So thank you for GPLing it, for opening the source. I think that's really cool. Oh, you know what? I didn't ask. Why did you choose GPL and not like a BSD or MIT license?
Oh yeah, it's a good question. Why did I not do BSD? Well, BSD allows you to do derivative commercial works, right? Without crediting or anything, it's with crediting, isn't it?
Yeah, I know for me in my projects, like, I do use MIT licensed stuff at work a lot, and I appreciate that. But on the other hand, when I'm writing this stuff that I hope will inspire other programmers, I like it to be GPL so that I know anybody that looks at it or variants are also going to be open source, so that nobody makes a closed source version of my open source program. But
yeah, that would be kind of weird to derive a commercial work. You know, whenever I think of the BSD license, I think of Kenta Cho, I think his name was, who did a game called Tomiki Fighters. And some Wii developers took that, made an editor around it, and kind of said thank you, and released it. And I don't think I don't think the game was a massive hit or anything, but that has always struck me as kind of weird that, you know, that could happen. You know, a game suddenly is on the shelves that contains some other guy's code, and he didn't really have much of a say in it, and that's just, I don't know.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for being on here and for writing open source software. I hope we continue to see more from Extent of the Jam. And thanks for being on.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. It was really good for Lewis to get on there and work with me and share with us, you know, his stuff. So go check out Digits 2, go use it, it's open source, and show us what some open source musicians can do with a tool like that. Can't thank him enough, but I'll just give up for now. And nothing less to say except some contact info. I'm Spencer Jackson. You can email me at contributions@opensourcemusician.com. You can check out our wiki at opensourcemusician.com. My email that I shared is incorrect because I said musicians and it should have been musician. So correct that typo as you wrote it down. Check out the show notes if you really want it. I'm on the forums at linuxmusicians.com. SSJ71 is my handle. I'm also on Freenode IRC in the Opound open source musicians with an S there place. So I'm on other places too, but you can check out all our episodes on archive.org. And thanks for listening. Podcast out.